Right on. All right. How long you guys think this will take?
I don't know. If we go long, we can take a cheesecake break. Hello and welcome to I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside, a podcast that wears its sunglasses at night, so it can, so it can. I'm Scott, and with me today are two fine gentlemen. Care to introduce yourselves?
Well, my name is Sobro Ryu, and I was invited as a guest to be on I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside, and thank you for having me, Scott.
No problem.
And I am Jeff, also known as Jabman025, also known as the Defender of Destiny. I swear, the things I've heard since you've given me that nickname.
Who? It wasn't me that gave you that nickname.
Okay, fine. You three at Gundam.
Oh my gosh. You can thank Neo All for that and that commercial. Which came out very good. I dig that commercial a lot, especially with all the sound quips from... Double Zeta, or I'd say from one of the Gundam games where I got them from, but yeah.
It was fun, but I was kind of just amused. Someone spent that much time on this?
Well, Neo did it on a whim, I decided to edit it to make it a little bit more epic than what it was, but it was a nice collaboration, man. You're welcome.
I still get people comment on my YouTube page. Hey, are you that guy from Gundam, the Defender of Destiny? I'm like, yeah, that's me.
See, man, we're bringing you traffic.
That's what I needed.
There you go.
I should thank you. You're actually one of my bit... the Gundam, various MHQ and Gundam things are my biggest referring URLs if you compile them all together.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you.
Yeah, and the most viewed single page is the Dresden Files episode.
Oh, wow.
That Chris was on. But the most downloaded episode, interestingly enough, is the second one.
What happened in that one?
That was the Last Airbender thing.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Did you guys talk about the movie and the series, or just the movie?
Movie and the series, and a bit of speculation on... Legend of Korra.
Oh, and is the sequel for that movie still on?
I think it's still on, but it's fairly early, and Shyamalan's name not so attached to it this time.
About time, that man's lost all of his directorial skill. Man, he blew it all on what's that movie? Stuart Little.
Oh snap!
I'm just kidding. I Unbreakable. It's probably my favorite film from him. I do like The Sixth Sense, but you know, you can't really rewatch it too many times because you know the ending pretty much, you can't beat that. So, but Unbreakable, I love that entire film. It's slow paced as it is. I think that's his best work, and I know he likes to ape a lot of Hitchcock, but he did it very well in that film. And for it to have such a comic book basis, but for it to be so subtle in its delivery of that, you wouldn't even know it until the movie progresses towards the end. And I think that movie's genius. I think he's plateaued after that. But I don't want to count him out. He might find his artistic flair again, but probably not in an Avatar movie. That's for damn sure.
All right. So moving into pick of the week. Does anyone want to kick it off?
Well, I might as well just mentioned that my obsession for this week has been pretty much two games. One of them I've been waiting for an absolutely long time, and it finally came out this week on the Xbox 360 and the PS3. The game is Marvel vs. Capcom 3, and I'm a big fighting game junkie, so when this game came out...
Really?
Oh, no doubt.
You are a fighting game junkie? I never knew that, Soulbro.
I kept that in the closet for too long. But yeah, as is well known, I'm a big fighting game nut, and I bought that game. I pre-ordered it and got the special edition on the 360. I'll get it for the PS3 eventually, but Been playing that off and on all week. Another game came out on the 360 also as a downloadable game on Xbox Live, and it's called Hardcore Uprising, which is in the family of games from Konami. The franchise is known as Contra, and a lot of people who've been gaming for a long time know of the Contra series, where you run a gun and jump on platforms and whatnot. Well, this game was developed for Konami by Arc System Works, who also is well known for their fighting games. Blaze Blue, Guilty Gear, and a game they made for Capcom, Sengoku Basara. They made this game for Konami, and basically your characters, you can pick one of four. They run through stages and platforms, and they pick up weapons, and you can switch them on the fly, and it's really action-packed. And playing the arcade mode is very hard, but if you can play a special mode in a game called Rising Mode, and in it, when you go through the game, you earn more continues, you can buy weapon upgrades, you can buy extra men, more health, all this stuff, and it allows you to continue grinding in the game and replaying levels as many times as you want to build up more money and to mac out your character. And you can mac out all four. The sad part is although the game costs 1,200 Microsoft points, in order to get the 50% of the cast, you have to spend 400 more points to buy two extra characters. The game gives you two, Bahamut and Crystal. In order to get the other two, Sayuri and Harley Daniels, they're 200 points apiece. So I ended up spending $20 American, in order to get the game. But it's one of the best purchases I've ever bought on Xbox Live. I'm quite amazed at how many times I've played that game and how much enjoyment it still brings to me. I play it in between times where I get frustrated with MVC 3, so it's really good to have something to run to when I get fed up with getting my ass kicked online.
I gotta say, not a fighting game junkie here, but I was watching Deadpool's taunts and his like little win speech things, and I'm like,
oh yeah,
that tempts me.
He's absolutely a riot in the game. He probably has the most win quotes in the game, and his interactions between characters are incredible. I like when he runs into Ryu or any character from Street Fighter. He'll actually acknowledge them as a character from Street Fighter. I think he says, "I freaking love Street Fighter." Yeah, actually, he exclaims that. And when he beats Magneto, he actually says, "I beat Mag freaking Nito." Oh, the best part is when he faces off with Magneto. He actually says Magneto's line from the old arcade game from Konami. He actually says, "Welcome to die." and in the exact same manner that Magneto in that game said it. So it's a total riot. And they put a lot of fan service and love into that game. And it's very easy. A lot of beginners can pick up the game and get into it very quickly because of the simple mode. And also, even if you play normal mode, it's not very hard to acclimate yourself with the way the game system is. Mastering it, that's a different story, but getting into it, it's not nearly as intimidating as the previous Marvel Versus. So I got to give it to Capcom. They really spent their time. I have some issues with some of the balancing and some of the characters, but I'm pretty sure they'll fix those during the numerous updates that'll be for that game over the next couple of weeks. But that's all I got to say about MVC 3 for the time being, and I'll pass it along to somebody else.
Yeah, I picked up MVC 3 too, and I'm having a lot of fun. Have you played Deadpool when he beats Wolverine?
No, I haven't heard that yet. What does he say?
When he takes down Wolverine, he goes, "That's how you take down Wolverine. Now I'm the best there is at whatever the hell he does."
That is awesome. That guy is total nuts, man. And they got Nolan North to do his voice. You know,
yeah. Did a good job on that.
Most people know Nolan North from Mass Effect and Uncharted. So it's just weird to see him do such an animated. He usually plays cool and calm characters, but to hear him.
Well, Nolan
Deadpool.
North was Deadpool in Hulk Versus.
Yes, he was, right? And I saw those clips on YouTube and I was amazed. It's like, wow, this guy really brought this character to life. He does a better job than Ryan Reynolds. The last person I saw play Deadpool, you know, he does a better job than him. So hats off to Nolan North. He really blew it out the water.
I really enjoyed Deadpool now. Onto my pick of the week.
Oh.
I'm moving into another podcast territory, but hey, what the hell. I'm going to say Gundam OOF manga. For the most part, I usually don't enjoy Gundam mangas just because you don't get to see the fun mech battle. That you see drawings of mechs attacking each other, mm-hmm. which to a certain extent just isn't a whole lot of fun, and usually the stories are half-cocked thrown together, but the Astray mangas were pretty good, and I really enjoyed Gundam OOF, the fourth and final volume just came out. It takes place about halfway through season one and into the gap between season one and season two. Explains some of the things that happened in between. A little support group called Freshette that, oh my god, I can't think of the name all of a sudden. Celestial Being. Mm-hmm. Celestial Being doesn't even know about. They're a support group that operates behind the scenes, and they got some older model Gundams that they use, the Astraea. It's actually quite a lot of fun. The lead character is a complete and utter psychotic maniac who does something really interesting in Volume 4. He takes a asteroid and he's going to drop it onto Earth, which, okay, ooh, everybody's done that. Big whoop. But right before he does it, he blows up the asteroid, creating a huge haze all around the planets, which, of course, blocks the solar rays from the solar energy powers.
Ooh. Not a bad one.
And that's kind of like a nod to Gundam 0083, and that's how the Titans got created. That's how the A-Laws got created, because so there's still terrorists out there. We need the A-Laws to protect us.
Ah.
And that... And, okay, if any of my buddies from the A and Gundam panels are listening, now I can stop bitching about that bit of Season 2 of 00. Alright, and my pick of the week is going to a webcomic called Manly Guys Doing Manly Things. It is about a temp agency for ultra-macho video game characters as they try to integrate into regular real life. So you'll get strips where Crosshouse is doing quick-time events to show people resolution on big screen TVs at Best Buy.
As that sounds awesome.
Yeah. So a lot of the humor comes from just these very bizarre characters in rather mundane settings. And it's you might remember it from the Escapist webcomic contest from about 2 years ago, I guess, now. It did not win, but I'm glad to see it got continued.
Well, it's good. I mean, it sucks that it didn't win, but it looks like, it's cool that the creator of it found the drive to keep it going and is building his own audience. So that's pretty cool.
It's a her, actually.
Oh my god! Well,
which adds an extra layer of humor to the macho-ness.
Well, I sit corrected. I have to check that out. Is it? You can just go to Google and search up manly guys doing manly things.
Yeah, the URL, it'll also be in the show notes, but it is, the punchline is machismo.com.
Oh, nice, nice.
I just want to see Solbro type that into the Google search. Manly men machismo.
Oh. Yeah, might want to turn safe search on for that one.
Thanks for the heads up.
And I guess we should move into our main topic, which is certain trends in anime.
Right.
Things we like, things we don't. I think, and I'd like to start this off with a debate. A friend of mine who actually suggested this episode but couldn't make it tonight because he's busy being a scientist or something. He's actually very irritated with the use of 3D CG animation incorporated with their 2D animation, and would like to see it end because it's so jarring compared to the rest of things. Kind of disagree, I think. Yeah, there are instances of shows that just have terrible CG integration, but I think there are a lot of things that improved by it. Like Ryback, which is a series that will finally get released in English in April of this year, has CG mech designs, and it just looks, you know, ridiculously awesome. Everything moves so fluidly, and you don't really even mind that they stand out a bit just because of how well the animation ends up looking for it.
Right.
And I think that there are, and certainly there are shows with really jarring CG elements, but if you think it doesn't have a place in traditional animation, I dare you to watch the first 5 minutes of Samurai 7 and tell me that was not one of the balls-out most awesome things you've ever seen.
Yes, that was a great battle. The thing about using 3D animation is, when it first came out, it was, you know, the brand new thing. It was the big deal, and every anime show put it in there, whether it really needed it or not.
Yeah.
To say, hey, look, we're cutting edge. Look, we're using the latest. Even if they really didn't need to, they put it in there just to say, hey, look, we got it too.
Oh, yeah.
And some places just didn't know how to use it. Other places used it poorly. Other places just put it in there where it didn't need to be done in the first place. But I think now you're starting to see more uses of it that actually make sense.
There were some shows back in the day that were, it was a double-edged sword with it, too. The one that stands out in my mind was Initial D when they were doing that. But I've also read the manga for Initial D, and the artist for that is incredibly detailed with those race scenes. If you look at the pictures, like the spread shots or the landscape pictures in the manga where they're doing the racing and they're drifting and you got all the speed lines and everything like that, replicating that in animation would have been unbelievably difficult. I honestly think that they did a good job with going into using CG, although it looked shoddy for its day. And looking back at it now, you know, it looks like PlayStation 1 graphics. But, you know, that's what they had, and it was a show with a low budget anyway. So for them to go CG like that, I think, was a smart move. In the later seasons of that show, it looks a lot better. And you just get past the fact that the cars are CG. And there's other examples nowadays that, you know, where it blends in a bit nicely. Like Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, and the movies, the later movies, are subtle with it. And I like that. I like the fact that it's cel-shaded. You can still see it's CG, but it blends into the picture a whole lot more. And they've done a flawless job with incorporating it into the show. And there's a couple mecha shows that I can name off also. Macross Frontier. It did a really good job with it, I think. You know, you could tell the Valkyries are CG, but, you know, it didn't stand out to me as being something that was an eyesore. Macross Zero, another great example of that. It was those mecha were clearly CG in that show. And then one of the Gundam series, Gundam Unicorn, you kind of got a blend of 2D mechs at certain shots and then CG mechs at others. So, and I think they're doing a good job too. So I don't think it's being over abused, except for maybe some series I probably haven't seen. But in my opinion, I think it's helped to realize a lot of anime that probably wouldn't have been realized otherwise.
Yeah, another mech anime that uses CG really well is Strain.
Yes.
That was a lot of fun to watch those, because those fights were really kinetic, like almost Dragon Ball Z levels of motion.
Goodness.
And I would not have wanted to watch that with, you know, 2D animation, because it would have looked like, well, Dragon Ball Z.
Well, another thing you start seeing more and more out of the animation is because, you know, while you got the CG effects, they don't always look good compared to hand-drawn cel shades or hand-drawn drawings. But these days, a lot of anime is already done on a computer, so it's all CG, even though it's kind of a hand-drawn CG.
Exactly.
So CG will blend better with a computer-animated show than a hand-drawn show sometimes.
Exactly. Just like I said, look at Initial D, a hand-drawn show, but CG vehicles in there. The cars are eyesores. I'll be the first to admit it. In that show, but the later seasons, all CG, whether it be the 2D animation or the 3D cars, it's all CG. So it's almost like a natural progression for that. I don't want to see my entire anime in CG. I still want hand-drawn characters, but when it comes to the vehicles they drive and the inanimate objects or the lifeless objects, I don't mind CG, as long as it's done in a way that makes it not stand out and take me out of the show. That's all I can ask.
I find that CG backgrounds tend not to blend quite so well, but that's something they're working on. And speaking of CG, I just finished reading the second volume of Ghost in the Shell.
Right.
And a lot of the backgrounds in that, particularly in the color pages, are done in CG, as are Motoko's little helper robot guys. And, you know, that just looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of the panels.
You're talking about man-made interface?
Yeah, man-machine interface.
Man-machine interface. It's been a while since I read it, but yeah, I did enjoy that kind of style that Masamune Shiro brought to that. I thought that was it was off-putting to see that in a manga, but at the same time, I thought it worked because everything that was CG was machinery, so I didn't have a problem with that.
And something else that you see in CG is, you watch Futurama, and it's really interesting. If you know how to look at Futurama, you can see scenes where, in one shot, Bender is traditional 2D animation, probably being banged out by some Korean somewhere. And then next shot is going to be a CG Bender, and it's practically seamless. And
now, I don't know about that, Scott. Scott, when I watch Futurama, it's fairly like evident as day when they switch from one to the other. Like, up there's 3D Bender, up there's drawn Bender, up back to 3D. I think, especially whenever they show the Planet Express ship, it just screams CG all the time, except when it's in dock, then it's hand-drawn.
Well, you know what, though? It's I don't know how many frames that Bender and the ship move at or anything CG in the show? I'm assuming it's 30 frames.
No, it's probably 12.
It's 12. So you're saying 12 frames for the CG in that?
Well, hand-drawn animation is all 12. It might be 24 for CG. I'm not sure, but North American animation is consistently on 2s, and then anime will fluctuate based on budget and what they're actually shooting.
Very true. Very true. Yeah, I was thinking that CG in shows would have been either 30 or 60, just like video games. But then again, you got to make it match with film stock. So what you're saying makes sense.
That and 60 frames a second on TV.
Yeah.
It's this very interesting thing is people associate high frames per second outside of video games with home camcorders.
Mm-hmm.
And so they associate high frame rates with cheap movies. So you can shoot something in. So films are shot digitally, and they choose to shoot at 24 frames a second.
Right on.
Not because it's economical or saves hard drive space, but because that's what people are used to. It's very messed up.
Well, I have learned something today.
It's sort of like how people think poorly encoded MP3s coming through teeny iPod speakers sound better than, you know, high fidelity analog recordings.
Yeah, FLACs. I've finally made the change to FLAC. I used to avoid them like the plague, but now when I come across them, I now appreciate them because, A, they won't degrade, and B, the sound is so much better, especially coming through a stereo system. If anything, I see where you're coming from.
I think we may have exhausted that topic.
You lost me, guys, around the techno babble. I was like, I don't know where they're going with this, but...
Well, no, there's a couple other trends that I wrote down.
All right.
One of the ones I don't like, and I might be alone on this one, is I'm not a big fan of Moe. I'm not. And I know that's the big trend in Japan. I know it's a big sell point for a lot of shows nowadays, and a lot of otaku have gravitated towards that kind of show. And I might be an antique when it comes to my anime. I may like what I was exposed to in the 80s and the 90s and what little shows I've seen from the 70s. It's a completely different space in the anime industry now when it comes to the majority of shows that are coming out. A lot of them are moe based, and a lot of them have an art style that, you know, accentuate the cuteness of the women, and then the guys just kind of look bland. I kind of miss the old art style where everybody kind of had a unique look, and nowadays everybody's like little cutesy characters, and I know I'm bitching, but
my animes had manly men, musty ladies, and giant robots were the size of skyscrapers.
They have the over-sexualized women is also a problem, too. I think that's also kind of tasteless. I know when it comes to fan service, it's, you know, people want to look for that and see that, but... You know, I want my characters to have three dimension, and usually when they have a really busty chick, she usually doesn't have much dimension to her. You know, she's usually just there to titillate the senses, and that's about it. So, you know, it's just I like to have these women have depth in shows, and to come off as a bit more three dimensional, and you don't have to make them overly sexy or overly moe in order to give them some kind of attraction or character. But I'm not Japanese, I don't live in Japan, and I'm not giving money directly to the industry, so I guess I can't. I have no dog in this fight. But
so you aren't buying like Figmas of these cute little things?
Not me. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, not me personally. No, hell no.
Well, I guess I'm half guilty. Does Figmas of Lucky Star count? Because I got that. But
you know what?
Distinction I want to make is that there are moe shows which are usually just like half-assed adaptations of visual novels.
Yeah.
And then there's shows with moe in them. Like they adopt the art style, but the story and plot or content is very typical. Like Lucky Star is just this talking about nothing nerdy reference comedy show. You could do with really anything. You could use stick figures for this, and it would still be just as funny.
Yeah,
the art style is very moe.
Yeah, and I'm cool with Lucky Star. I like the show for the content, not the art style. And I've come across shows where I completely hated the art style, but the show rocked. It kicked ass because the story was great and the characters were appealing, and you know, it drew me in every episode. So I really have no beef with Lucky Star, even with the moe look. That's cool, but when it has the moe look, it takes a lot to sell me on the show. You know, if it's just there to be cute and for, you know, guys to get off on that, then I'm out. But if it's something that has a little soul to it, a heart and soul, as the internet likes to use, yeah, it's got to have some substance, man. Otherwise, I'm not there. But yeah, you're right.
Sorry, bro.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm not going to sit here and defend Moe. I'm not that crazy. I'll defend certain things, but come on. But anyway, I will say that within every genre and every trend, because we know anime follows big trends, and they, like I said in a past episode, every time there's a big hit show, everyone starts copying it. When you got a big Moe hit, every company's going to put out a Moe show.
Yeah, you're
but
right.
Every time that happens, there are a few gems hidden in the rough.
Yep.
There's just a whole lot of crap you got to dig through to get to it. And I'll admit, right now there is a whole lot of crap being shoveled out there. But I'm just saying, don't discount the entire, you know, generation of shows we're seeing right now, because there is some good stuff in there and a lot of crap.
Well, I have to have you point me in the direction of that, because it's almost like I've given up. Almost. I don't think I've watched any new animes, save for anything mecha-related, probably over the last 3 years. And I used to be on top of that. I used to – and not that we should endorse piracy or anything like that, but if I used to be on top of all the – new shows being released, to the point where I was watching the Raws, and there was some unique stuff coming out in the early 2000s. I was definitely enjoying that, and you know, I was seeing all the creativity that was coming out of the industry. And then somewhere in the mid 2000s, we reached the Moe glut, and it just hasn't stopped. It hasn't stopped at all. So that's one thing I have to complain about. I have some positives to throw in there too, but any other thoughts on Moe, guys?
It'll die out eventually. Just bear with it. All trends die out of.
We just gotta ride this one out.
Oh man, it's a tsunami. I guess my next one is the timid Japanese male. I you know, that's another thing that will probably never change, and that's been around since the beginning of anime. It's something that, you know, kind of sometimes pisses me off, because the character could make choices if he wasn't so timid, but instead, you know, his timidness just seems to gum up the works sometimes with the other characters. And it can be used as a plot device, but a lot of times you see that in a lot of shows, and it just drives me nuts. But then again, Soul Bros men seem to be timid. But
yeah, I'm hearing you talking, and it's like, Sanji does that. Sanji does that.
He's a bit timid, but he grows out of that. And I knew with his kind of character, there would be that progression. So I'm fine with that. It's just in some other shows where you have the timid male, like in a lot of harem shows, you have the timid male, and it goes hand in hand with that, like Tenshi or Love Hina. You know, Tenshi, you know, he's got a little bit of backbone in a crisis, but Love Hina, I got fed up with that show probably by about episode 5 and couldn't take it anymore, because that guy just takes beatings every episode, and it's like, he's way too timid, man. You got to stand up for yourself. What's that?
Love Hina would better if it was about that quirky professor guy he hung out with all the time.
Exactly.
With his ridiculous van.
That guy was cool, but I just couldn't hang with that show, because the guy had no spirit.
And that's weird, because I think the original harem show, the guy, like, going back to like Ranma 1/2 and even Urusei Yatsura, those were harem shows where the guys, you know, had backbone. What the fuck happened?
Yeah, my man Ranma, and what was the dude's name from Urusei Yatsura? I forget now. But he was the best. That guy, in out of all the harem shows, he's probably my favorite. And then Ranma Saotome is a classic, especially with his whole turning into a girl thing. But somewhere along the line, they decided to go with the more Tenshi Muyo format, and that crap drives me nuts. I guess my last thing I'll bitch about is the perfect adaptation of manga. I guess for some shows, this has to deal with more so a case by case basis with me, where if I've read the manga, then if it's the anime is a perfect adaptation of the manga, I no longer feel myself compelled to watch the anime, because I've already been there, done that. Now, vice versa, if I've never read the manga or the manga isn't out here, then there's an anime. If an anime comes along that adapts it perfectly, then that's cool. You know, I never was exposed to it, and I can watch it. In all truth, I would like any adaptation that is based on a manga to deviate just a little bit and change a few things, so that it's not completely a take on the manga, an exact take on the manga that robs me of the need of reading the manga, or it robs me of the need of watching the show. And I think that's a detriment to either way.
When it comes down to it, I would like to see a variation in an adaptation. And the reason why is because I want to have a drive to go and read the original material. A perfect example is Full Metal Alchemist. When that show was being developed, when the manga was first coming out, they made an anime based on the premise, and they did borrow a few things from the manga, but for the most part, it deviated in its own path, which makes, you know, the show have its own identity. The manga, you know, kept on going well after the show had ended, and then they decided to make another adaptation of that manga in its exact form, in anime form. So we got two shows out of one story premise, which I think is really cool. You got the Word of God version, which is the new version, the Brotherhood, and then you have Seiji Mitsushima's version, which is, you know, unique in its own way, and I think that's pretty cool. I wish that Monster had done that. I'm a big fan of Naoki Urasawa, and when the anime version of Monster came out, it was cool that the anime version was exactly like the manga, but I had already read the manga, so there was no surprises in the anime when I watched it. Maybe that's my own fault. I could have waited. But I would like to see something different in execution. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make there when it comes to an adaptation of a manga. But any thoughts, guys?
Going back to Brotherhood, I have specifically not watched that because I'm about 10 volumes behind in the manga, and I know that if I watch Brotherhood, I will never buy any more, and I will not read anything. I know it. So that's why I have not watched Brotherhood.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that's the plan. Actually, I've now resolved that anytime I hit the bookstore and actually buy something, I will pick up one volume of Full Metal Alchemist, just so I can catch little bits at a time, just so I can catch up. But getting into the adaptation thing, I'm of two minds, because some of my favorite things are adaptations of other works that are interesting and new interpretations, like Batman the Animated Series. Certainly draws ideas from Batman comics across the decades, but it is definitely in and of itself its own thing.
Right.
And I enjoy both because of that. But then again, there's some manga I absolutely love and would love to have seen them, you know, done accurately or done right. Like, particularly when it comes to filler endings or series that just cut off midway through. Like, I am still a bit annoyed with Berserk for ending the way it did. So, yeah, it's been 10 years. I'm still mad at Berserk.
You're a bitter, bitter man, Scott.
Yes,
welcome
but production.
To the club.
Yeah, but production IG is doing something with Berserk, so yep. I'm happy. But then again, I'm sad that I can't troll newbies by claiming that they're making a sequel to Berserk. Guys, just watch.
Well, didn't the original anime version of Berserk didn't it serve as a prequel to the comic?
Well, no, it was an adaptation of a certain arc of the comic. Like the comic picks up in medias res, you know, just basically not long after the events of the series, and then after a couple of volumes, jumps back to tell the entire backstory.
Oh wow, that's interesting to know. I put off watching that show, but I always wanted to see it. I hear a lot of rave reviews. I've read a couple volumes of the manga though, and I think like the first three. So it might have started delving into the story by then. I'm not sure, but if anything, that's definitely good to know, man. Thank you.
Touching on the topic of adaptations, I don't know about you guys, but I think 90% of the adaptations fail for various reasons. But the most common reason is they try and stick to the original source material just too much. Right. Especially if you've already read the original source material, you'd like to see something a little different. You'd like to see them mix things up a little. I think that's why, personally, I liked the original Full Metal Alchemist better. Just because up to a certain point, they were having to stick to the manga. But once they caught up to the manga, they went off on their own little path. And you could kind of enjoy things as they moved on their own. I don't mind, like, when a manga adapts, like, for example, the manga adaptation of Evangelion. It takes the anime premise and it does its own little twist on it. As long as it's not a carbon copy, I don't care.
Right.
Because whenever you try and make a carbon copy of something that's already been made before, there's no room for creativity. You're just doing what somebody else already did. And the other hazard with that is sometimes you can't do it fast enough, hence the Dragon Ball Z, Naruto, and Bleach filler arcs where, okay, we can't make up something on our own, so we're just going to throw some nonsense together to fill 30 episodes so the original artist can actually come up with something good.
Right.
Yeah, filler arcs did give us the episode where Goku and Piccolo learn how to drive.
Yes, it did.
I can forgive filler because Goku and Piccolo learned how to drive.
Well, you know, in small doses, it's okay. It's okay. I think that's kind of cool. I know that Naruto overstayed its welcome when Naruto overstayed its welcome with this filler arc. Didn't it go on for like 100 episodes?
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah. Wow, that's insane. But you know what? I think that with Naruto, they had the luxury of doing that because there's a time skip in the series. So I think that makes sense for them to do that. But at the same time, you know, people want to, I guess in Japan, they're accustomed to reading or to watching what they've already read. And it might have infuriated a few people on both sides of the Pacific. But I haven't watched Naruto in a long time. So I when I do get back into it, hopefully that filler arc isn't that bad. But we'll see.
It is.
Oh, man.
The other thing about filler arcs that just end up bothering me is they also tend to cheap out on the animation.
Yeah.
Like, they get lazy, things go off model, they go to the bargain basement Koreans rather than the better Koreans for their in-betweens, and it just doesn't end up working out quite so well.
The old anime friend trick. go ahead.
Well, maybe it's just me, but I tend to think that, you know, original projects get more detail, more creativity. Look at, like, Last Exile, Eureka 7, stuff that just, you know, original project is based on nothing. Just came out of nowhere. Those shows are slick. There's very few filler episodes. They look great because, let's face it, these guys who are making it are putting out, you know, their project, not somebody else's project, not something else some guy wrote. This is their baby.
And they know where it's going to go from start to finish as opposed to a ongoing manga that's going on right now. Like, I've got no problem with One Piece or Dragon Ball Z or any serialized manga that's going on as the animated series is going on, trailing behind. But they have the disadvantage of not knowing where the series is going to eventually end up when they animate the show. And they don't know if it's going to progressively get worse or get better or, you know, to end up being a Hallmark series. So, you know, you take a gamble with that as opposed to an original product like Eureka 7 or Cowboy Bebop, where they know exactly where the plot is going to go and whatever every episode is going to be about when they do it. And I just like you, my tendencies go towards the original series or adaptations that take an original take on a story already established. So I'm right there with you.
Getting into other things, I think... Yeah, there are a lot of anime that are original works that are just great or are just spinning off of the premise that are great. But another thing that's getting a lot more attention for adaptation now is our light novels, which are just these short little, like, I think they get sold with young adult fiction whenever they come over to North America. But they're like 200 pages designed to be sort of commuter time fillers. And guys like Kyo Annie and JC Staff tend to hit up the light novel section for adaptation material more often than not. And I think they do better for it because you can get, you know, 6 to 13 episodes out of one of these novels.
Wow.
And that seems to avert most of the problem, especially because Kyoto Animation and, again, JC Staff, tend to be more willing to take a more American approach to the way they run their series, where they'll do 13 or 26 episodes, stop for a year, and come back with 26 more. The second and third season of Full Metal Panic ended up working out. Same with Shakugan no Shana and Haruhi Suzumiya, for that matter.
Wow, that's not a bad deal. That's not a bad format. Heck, the it might help to benefit those animes in the end because they have a chance to recharge and to come up with new ideas. For those, are to wait till new light novels come out so that they can adapt those as well.
Well, in terms of light novels, I think you got a little more wiggle room. I mean, let's face it, they're light. They're not heavy on detail.
Yeah.
You know, they give you the characters, the setting, and what's happening. And since they're so short, they don't have a whole lot of detail written in there. So there's a lot of wiggle room for the artists and the creators to fill in those gaps.
Yeah. That's true, and they can put it in whatever format they wish too, depending on I guess how the light novels play out. Like for the first time in Gundam history, a Gundam series is being adapted off of light novels to be an OVA series, and that's Gundam Unicorn. I honestly think that light novels is a pretty good place for inspiration when it comes to bringing things to the big screen for in animation.
That is true. Well, I do not disagree with these points that you have made.
Well, damn. You still there, Jabman?
I'm still here.
Oh, cool. I've got some trends that I do think are awesome in anime today. One of the trends, unavoidable, is crisper animation. Even in the episodes that are poorly drawn by the bargain basement Koreans, they're all using computers now, so they have the kind of that rich, slick look that computer colored cells would have, and you know, shows that are made with modern technology would have. I kind of miss that old rugged look of animation across the board, whether it's anime or animation here in America or around the world. But at the same time, some of those don't transfer very well to HD, unlike the shows that are being made nowadays. And to be able to watch those shows in HD is even a better boon than watching it in its original format of I forget the way the original TVs were sized. Because there's an onslaught of typical shows that are coming up nowadays, I always like the occasional risky series that just pops out of nowhere. Like it was a show that I watched a couple of years ago that I really enjoyed. They called it 100 Stories in Japan, but the American adaptation was called something else. Something in the Darkness. I forget what the actual title was, but that show was really cool to watch. Also, Samurai Champloo. That's a risky series because who knew that a combination of samurai era Japan and hip hop would actually work so well together. But yeah, the occasional risky series that comes along that ends up being a gem. I like those shows a lot.
There have been some things that have taken a little risk, like going back to Bakano, also based on a light novel. I should have mentioned that prior, but Bakano is this show that tells the story out of order.
Oh wow!
Like, in sort of the good way, like Boogie Pop Phantom did, where it's a news reporter telling these events that happened on a train, on this ridiculously chaotic train ride, to her editor. And it's all these bits and pieces coming together, and then she backs up and goes and tells it from another character's perspective. It ends up watching a lot of the way people tell stories, where, you know, you start out with this premise, and then you're like, wait, no, it's important that you know that this guy's my uncle, and he has this farm, and that's why this happens now. Also, it had crazy immortals beating the junk out of each other, and all sorts of fun. And it was set in the 1920s America, just to cap it all off.
That is crazy, man. I've heard a lot about Bakano. I've been wanting to watch that show too.
Well worth it. It's on Funimation's streaming site, Dealey Doo. So look at it.
Yes. Thank you for the heads up.
I'll throw out a trend. This ain't one I particularly like or dislike really, but it's kind of been around since pretty much the beginning of anime till day one. The kind of fatalistic tone a lot of shows take. It's the end of the friggin' world in every single anime show, it seems like. It's either post-apocalypse, right before the apocalypse, or during the apocalypse.
Well, it's about that time, Jabman.
I guess. But you always look at these shows, war is either in the process, it's about to start, everyone's going to start dying here any minute, you know, existence itself will stop. Can we just have one friggin' nice day for a change? I mean, really.
Someone needs a dose of Azumanga Daioh.
Which is an awesome show. I'm glad to have it in my collection.
I keep meaning to buy it. I do.
How many shows out there have you seen where, you know, aside from, you know, campy, you know, comedy shows, where it's a nice day outside? No one's trying to kill us.
You raise a very good point. I own a lot of shows where the world is always either at the beginning or towards the end, the world is always up for grabs, or the world is always at the precipice of destruction, or the world is in dire straits the entire time. And yeah, you're right.
Is in the hands of an emo teenager.
There you go.
Actually, here's my pick that sort of blends the two extremes together. We have Zetsubou Sensei, where incredibly minor things will be the downfall of society, and it makes me so depressed I must hang myself in front of my class of high school students.
I hadn't heard of that one, Scott. That's a new one on me.
Zetsubou Sensei is amazing.
I've never seen it.
Well, the manga is currently being released, so check that out. But honestly, if you are up on the fan subbing, go track it down, just because the way I think it's Jun Fukuyama who plays the lead. And he's just got this fast-paced, madcap delivery of Zetsubou-shita! The state of corporate culture in Japan has left me in despair.
Well, it does sound interesting, man. If anything, I'll add that to the list.
If you want to read something, they did make an anime out of this, and it wasn't as good as the manga. But if you want something god awful, depressing, that you almost want to hang yourself, read a little manga called Saikano.
Saikano?
Yeah.
You mean the girl that's a weapon?
The girl's a weapon. Little schoolgirl gets turned into a weapon, and every single person in that manga dies. Everybody. And usually not, quick and painless. It's slow, it's nasty, and they suffer.
Wow, get out of town. I didn't realize it was that violent. I've seen bits and pieces of the anime, but I didn't realize it had a kill count like a Tomino show.
Oh, this puts Zeta Gundam on the back burner, okay? Everybody dies.
Man, now you're talking my language.
Yeah, well, it's because this little schoolgirl is so cute and cuddly, has her first boyfriend, and then she gets turned into the apocalypse machine and slowly just slaughters everyone on Earth.
Good God.
Doesn't want to do it. She's like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. As she launches, plagues out of her backpack and God knows what. I mean, it's really, really depressing. And at the end of the damn thing, only her boyfriend is left alive on Earth, and she's become a giant battleship of death, and he's the only survivor.
Wow. God dang. So she literally turns into a battleship?
Yeah, she turns into a gigantic battleship, which he lives inside, and he's the last human.
That is ridiculous. Well, I'm actually speechless.
It sounds silly in a premise, but after you read the whole manga, you're like, that is so damn depressing. I have the manga. I read it through once. I don't think I'll ever do it again.
Ooh.
It's like trying to watch Grave of Fireflies back to back. You just slowly go mad.
Yeah, that's the honest truth right there. I haven't watched Grave of the Fireflies. I own it on DVD, but I haven't watched it probably in 5 years. And I watched it once when I got the DVD, and I put it on the shelf. I was like, man, I don't think I'll need another good cry like that for at least half a decade.
I bought it on DVD, watched it once, like, that was a great movie, and I'm never watching it again.
Yeah.
Damn, man. Don't ever watch Dog of Flanders, then. That will mess you up. There's an anime adaptation of that, too, and it is so sad.
So watch Dog of Flanders, Grave of Fireflies, and read Saikano before you go to sleep, and you won't wake up.
Get the razor blades ready.
Yeah. Getting into a trend that I do enjoy is something that's kind of been a mixed bag, but I'm looking forward to seeing more of it, is the Japanese takes on American franchises. Like, we had Iron Man, which turned out not so good. Wolverine's going on right now. Supernatural's coming up, and then we've got sort of the Animatrix style spinoffs.
Supernatural? You mean they're making an anime based on the the CW TV series?
Yes, they are. And they have apparently commissioned a J-Rock cover of Kansas to be the opener.
Oh my God.
J-Rock cover of Kansas?
Yeah.
Hell, I gotta hear that just to hear it.
Yeah, it's very interesting to hear Kelly on My Wayward Son.
So, wait, well, hang on. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm just spouting that.
No problem. Are they actually adapting the story in the TV show, or are they adapting an original story that takes elements of Supernatural and puts Japanese characters into it.
It's about 50-50. It is going to be Sam and Dean driving around busting ghosts.
Uh-huh.
But half of it is going to be adapting particular aspects of the series myth arc, and then the other half is going to be new original stories about either following up on some of the side characters like Bobby and What's-His-Name and all these other guys, and because it's animation they get to fight, you see them go up against some slightly more outlandish, bizarre, Lovecraftian-type monsters just because they aren't constrained by sort of live-action TV budgets to do anything.
That is righteous, because there's a comic book of Supernatural now, isn't there?
They've done a couple of short run comics, yeah.
I wonder if they'll take any stories from that and roll with that too. But that's a really interesting concept. We've seen it, you know, every once in a while, like with the Animatrix and now Supernatural. But it's a trend that I like to see continue. Like, can you imagine how many shows you started watching that have ended getting canceled too early in their run? Like, say for instance, Firefly. If they did a continuation, like OVA movies or something like that, where they get the cast members to come back to voice their characters and it continues the story, or they do a little OVA series that takes place between Firefly and Serenity that kind of bridges the gap like some of the comic books have, I would love to see that. But it may not be profitable because of how Firefly ended up, but I think it'd be pretty
Firefly
cool
does ridiculously well on DVD, so... And the American DVD market is pretty much all anime. Like, the DVD market is all anime has. So I think there's this nice intersection where this could work.
Yeah. And there's
Silver,
other
series... I think you just...
What's that?
I said, Silver, I think you just described the Star Trek franchise. A series that died, had a whole bunch of movies, and then they brought it back with some new series.
Yeah, you're right. They did do... I guess I incidentally did, which is another good idea. They brought... like a chapter or several different random chapters of Star Trek to life in animation. Kind of like what they did in the 70s where there was the original series, and then in the 70s there was a Filmation adaptation of that series that's not half bad. It's actually very good. I'm not a big fan of Filmation because their animation is so limited, but that series had such great writing that I recommend it to anybody who loves Star Trek. It's almost like a continuation, like the fourth season of that show. Practically is that animated series.
Oh, now my brain's churning. Is that that for a while before Enterprise was announced, that there were the rumor was that the prequel Star Trek series was going to be about the Excelsior.
Oh,
Mr. Sulu's ship from Star Trek VI, and I was like, ooh, anime Sulu. If that could be interesting.
That would have been really cool, man. I'm sorry they slept on that, especially George Takei having such an awesome voice.
Oh yeah,
man. Woo, that would have been the best.
George Takei is so great.
But yeah, if anything, I welcome more of that trend if they decide to adapt or continue American TV shows that are ongoing or no longer going on. I think that's a beautiful idea. I might just get into Supernatural just after checking out that anime. So if anything, I'm looking forward to that. Plus what Marvel's doing, I commend the effort. I heard that Wolverine is a whole lot better than what Iron Man is, and I'm going to check out Wolverine when it's done. I'm looking forward to Blade. Hopefully that'll be pure awesomeness, but I guess...
I hope you're right, but I don't have much faith in that. I tried to like Iron Man. I really, really did, but it just sucked. I mean, it was like a cheap Power Rangers knockoff. Every episode was, okay, who are we going to fight this week?
It's a bit of tokusaku in there, but... He is a superhero, so I guess that makes some sense. But what about Wolverine? Wolverine, have you checked that out yet?
I haven't seen it yet. Did they change? I remember seeing the trailer way back when where, you know, he looked like a samurai with claws. Have they completely done away with that?
Yeah, they've completely changed that. Like they dropped the visual style entirely.
Yeah, they got rid of that mullet.
Well, he's still rocking kind of a mullet, but it's a very Wolverine-ish looking mullet.
Yeah. Wolvie always got some mullet and mutton chops to hear from Tuesday.
Well, yeah, but yeah, he looks a lot more like Logan Wood. He does. Compared to his that incarnation they created for the Comic-Con preview, he does. Matter of fact, Wolverine makes a cameo in the Iron Man show. I think it's episode 5 or 6. I can't remember which one, but he makes a cameo in there in the way he presently looks now. So I hear it's good. I talked to Neo briefly about that. One of my co-hosts on Gundam, I talked to him, and he gave it pretty good reviews from what he's seen so far. So like I said, I'll check it out when it's done, and I hope the next Marvel anime series is going to be nearly as cool.
Other things I'm liking to see is ever since Gurren Lagann, we've seen sort of an upshot, a reconstructionist movement in super robot shows where it's just good old-fashioned hot-blooded manliness and beating down aliens and none of this Ava-esque confusing slash depressing junk. Mm-hmm. Like I am enjoying that most thoroughly. Like Mazinger Z got a remake. That was classic, man.
We could definitely use a continuing resurgence of hot-blooded characters. It's the absolute opposite of the timid Japanese male that I'm so sick of. Thank Gurren Lagann for that, because it brought back a kind of character that I've been waiting for. Even though Simone was timid, he grew out of that. So I don't mind if the character grows out of that and becomes, you know, a bit more developed. And, you know, he became a hot-blooded male, but a thinking hot-blooded male, which is probably the best blend between the two. I think that's the best. And I'm right there with you, man. I welcome more shows that feature those guys.
Soulbro, can I step in here for a second? I just heard something I have to question you on.
All right.
You just said you're sick of the weak-minded Japanese, or the weak-willed Japanese, pardon me. The leader of the Cult of Crossroad is saying this? Really?
I haven't been coerced into saying this. It's just that I like low-key characters. I like him. Like Rivals, he stands up for himself, but he's low-key, and I like him. Or what's-his-face? Cy Argyle. He's low-key, and he doesn't step up for everything, but there are moments in the show where he does step up, and he does, you know, do his part, and he's not in the background
being a, exactly.
But I mean, Kira's also genetically and physically his better. So there's no way he's gonna win a fight with Kira at all, and he knows it. Cy Argyle's a smart man. He was smart enough to stay out of Destiny. That's for damn sure.
Let's not go there.
Hey, man, I'm just saying.
Let's not go there. I'm gonna hijack this podcast.
My gosh. But you know what? Sobro's men are a unique blend. I would say that the most weak-willed character that I like is Saji Crossroad, and you saw what happened there. He grew out of it. He became a better man and
slightly different kind of delivery boy.
Yeah, exactly. And he's delivering steel chairs to people's faces. That's what's up.
I would have paid real money to see your face when he hit T-1000 ribbons with that chair. I bet you were like jumping out of your chair with joy.
I said, finally, Saji has come back to his nuts.
And then he did nothing for the rest of the movie.
Oh, man. You know, he put in work, man. He volunteered for the effort against to do his part against the aliens. He didn't get inside of a mecha and get needlessly killed. He worked on the support for all that, and he was out there on the front lines in his own way. I thought that was cool. No, a regular Saji would have just been a puss, and he would have said, violence is bad. I want nothing to do with that. You know, he finally found a reason to man up, and it was to help protect everybody he cared about. So that's Saji Crossroad, man. He's all right. he didn't quite become King Arthur, but he's King Arthur to me.
You'll put him in the Prince Charming role. How's that?
I will.
Say what you want about him. He's the only one at the end of the damn movie who had the girl.
Well, hang on. Hallelujah had a girl, too.
Okay.
And I think Billy had...
Billy had that weird-ass
clone of Nina.
Yeah.
It works for Billy, though. It worked for Billy. But any other things to add? I'm fresh out of my gripes and
You stole a couple of mine. That's an apocalypse one.
well, you're welcome. But yeah, I'm fresh out of pluses and minuses about the current trends in anime, but I don't think all is lost, and I think the anime industry is really trying to redefine itself. And on top of that, they have to think about the world market, which is probably why anime is a bit more PC now than it used to be in the 80s and 90s. But that's what brought me into anime to begin with, was the kind of risqueness of it all. And I kind of miss that. I understand the reasoning why it's a bit more PC and why you don't find too many ultra-violent shows or ultra-perverted series or anything like that nowadays, besides what you find in hentai. But, you know, they don't air those on TV. But, you know, other than that, I kind of miss that old, I don't want to say risk factor. The all-or-nothing days of anime, I miss that. I really do. It may come back again. Things do come around, and it is exciting to see what does come next when something good comes around. So,
one trend that it's kind of been building slowly over the past few years, but I'm interested to see it is that show where they do shows that are about anime nerds, like things like Welcome to the NHK, Genshiken, things that are sort of very self-referential.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I actually enjoy seeing all this. It's, you know, the Big Bang Theory, but not so lame half the time.
Yeah, we discussed one of those shows a little while ago. What was it?
Lucky Star?
Lucky Star, thank you. The quote-unquote Moe series. But no, you're right. It does delve into nerd factors, too. I mean, they bring up all sorts of stuff in the series, whether it be anime or video game related or just pop culture related, and I think that's the genius of the show. It knows its audience, and it plays off of that, and I welcome that kind of show too. Genshiken was a lot of fun, and the other one, Welcome to the NHK, I own the first manga of that, but I've never seen the anime of that series, but I liked what I read.
Welcome to the NHK ends up it goes to some dark places, but it's still very interesting, and Genshiken's just sort of hilarious when they do a whole episode about how to build Gundam models. It's like it doesn't get much nerdier content than that.
Exactly.
Yes, I remember reading that volume in the manga, and I'm reading that, it's like, oh my god, I'm in this episode. It's really creepy when you sometimes read that the episodes of Genshiken in the manga, and you see yourself in the manga, and you're like, that's a little too far.
Well, it's not a bad thing, though. It's because usually when we watch anime and we read manga, there's really no one that we can actually relate to, you know, being that we live in America. And there's some characters you can, because some stories are universal no matter what. But then, you know, some shows that are unbelievably Japanese, you know, we feel like outsiders when we watch them. And that's the big appeal for them. But it's a rare find when you find a show with a character you can exactly relate to. And I dig that. I dig that a lot.
I remember the tagline for the DVD. I'll still remember that. There's a picture of I can't think of the lead character's name in Genshiken, but he's at the table watching anime, and it says, "It's funny because it's true." He turns off the TV, starts walking away. His cell phone rings. It's the same damn theme song from the anime. He goes, "Hello?" He goes, "It hurts because it's true." That's fairly accurate.
Very much so.
Coming into another trend in anime. This is more of a trend of a character type, is every single show, well, not every single show, but a lot of shows seem to have the same basic character types. You got your hero. You got your damsel in distress.
Yeah.
Even though there's some variations on that. You've got your creepy, quiet girl who doesn't say anything, who sometimes becomes the damsel in distress. You've got your super-powered person. It kind of gets old after a little while. You get the same character type, you know. You watch the first episode, you figure out, okay, this is the hero, this is the villain, this is the, you know, this is the damsel, this is the creepy person, this is the sane person, this is the insane person, and, you know, you slowly work it out. I do like the episode, or the animes that, you know, they head fake you, this is the quiet, silent girl. And it head fakes. She's like, nope, she's the super-powered one, kind of like Haruhi did with Nagato. You expect her to be the quiet, silent one who doesn't do anything? No, she's the most powerful one of the damn group. But a lot of shows, you reuse the same character tropes over and over and over again.
Yeah. The same thing could be said about several forms of American fiction, too, though. I mean, you see that in role-playing games also. And it's kind of a hard thing to shake. It's kind of like the hero's journey, where, you know, most of the stuff we watch is pretty much the hero's journey told over again. You know, Joseph Campbell's the hero's journey, where you got the character who is destined
Campbell
for greatness.
Joseph Campbell is such brilliant bullshit. But the man was a genius. The man is a genius. Like, he self-selects for a certain story type. Acts astounded that the same characters and tropes exist in very similar stories. Makes becomes a major figure in English literary criticism for it, and then becomes a template for storytelling. Like, it stops being descriptive and starts being prescriptive. Like, the man might be the greatest academic of all time.
He did figure it out, and it's a good formula. It's kind of hard to shape because you do want to grow with the character, and it's the easiest way to do that. You know, you got the character starting out who, you know, is destined for greatness, and then he's in denial of that, and eventually there's acceptance, and then him achieving his goal, going on this journey, meeting other people, and meeting some of those archetypes that you had brought up, Jabman. It's really hard to shake. I mean, it's hard for even me to think of a story where it pulls the formula under the rug like that. I think I could. I would love to see a situation where I'm watching a show, it's the first episode, they focus on this one guy who you think is going to be the guy, and then they kill him off out of the blue. And then you another character that was in the background the entire time ends up being the hero of the show, kind of an uncommon hero, but, you know, hero of the show, and ends up doing it in a very uncommon way. And I'd love to see if I could have the writing ability to actually write something like that, or to see someone else take the risk of doing something like that.
Well, I think
Sir apropos of nothing.
I think to a certain extent, didn't we kind of see that in Gurren Lagann?
Well,
I mean,
we did.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Well, yes and no. You kind of had the sense that, you know, the senpai character was doomed, but he kind of became the main character through the first half of the series, and then all of a sudden, oop, he's dead.
I had forgot. Then,
well, This is the best interpretation of Gurren Lagann I've ever seen, is that it phrases it in the terms of well, again, getting into another sort of overused thing is finding Christ figures in pop culture, is
right.
That Kamina is Jesus, and that Simon is the Apostle Peter. So, and then most of this the last two thirds of the series are sort of Acts of the Apostles, where we have this guy who inspires a whole bunch of people, dies for them, and then they go on to do great things in his name. Like, even at the last episode, they're still acknowledging that Kamina is why they're there and what they're doing.
Yeah, that's a very good basis of comparison. That makes a lot of sense. And
so what you're saying is Kamina is Jesus H. Christ.
Yes. Well, even if you look at some of the specifics, it does point out, like, he does get stabbed in his left side when he dies.
You know,
someone's
Gainan
been reading into this a little too much.
Well,
sorry.
You know,
figure is a fun sport.
Well, you know what, though? It is from Gainax, and Gainax loves to pull from religion, as we've seen in Ava. So it's not a far stretch for that comparison to actually have
and
validity.
You have to remember that Peter's original name was Simon. And Jesus changed his name to Peter because he is the rock, and Simon is a digger.
Oh, get out of town, dude. That is nuts. So basically, Kamina is hot-blooded Jesus.
Hot-blooded Jesus.
Hot-blooded Jesus. Hot-blooded Jesus found a giant robot. I like it. I like it.
That's what's
up. I just gained an all-new appreciation for Gurren Lagann.
If you want to see real hot-blooded Jesus, watch Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter. Great movie.
I'm going to check that out. But man, I've now been educated a little bit on what could be a possible inspiration for Gurren Lagann. But yeah, I guess some stories never get old, and I don't have a big problem with the hero's journey, really. I have a problem with seeing it done poorly, and then I don't have a problem with seeing it done well. So it's just something I like to see done well every time, and not to see someone half-ass it. And I guess
my favorite hero's journey, total tangent here, is that there's a deleted scene from Scott Pilgrim where he, after he dies and comes back, and he walks into Wallace's apartment, and he talks to Wallace. It's like, I feel like I've been on this journey. I was an ordinary man, and then I heard then I received a call to adventure, a call that I considered refusing, but then my mentor, that's you, Wallace, told me to go on that call. And there were allies and obstacles, and I went into the cave and retrieved the sword, and then I died, only to return with new knowledge. That was just, I am so sad. Like, I understand why it was cut from the final film, because that last bit flows so much better without it there, But that scene's just hilarious.
It's awesome. I watched those deleted scenes too, and that tickled me pink when he went in. We pretty much described the hero's journey right off the bat, as if you know he was in on it the entire time. That movie is an understated gem, and I can't wait for people to discover that movie being the classic that it is. Scott Pilgrim versus the World. If you guys haven't seen it, please do. I don't know what you're waiting for. That movie is incredible. Don't let Michael Cera scare you off. I like Michael Cera, but I think that movie is a gem, and I think it has a lot to do with the director. I'm blanking on his name. Edgar Wright. Thank you. God dang, I've seen all his work, and I can't remember his name. I'm such an asshole. But no problem. I'm in agreement with you guys. The hero's journey, it just needs to be done right. But that's me.
We're going on the flip side. If there's a show that I always use as an example as completely following no trends whatsoever in terms of, you know, the character types and certain plot points, it's a little show called Fooly Cooly. Because that basically has damn no plot of any sense whatsoever.
No, though there is plot. You just have to watch it 4 times and you'll find it.
Yeah, well,
it's like there's this pirate king who's been kidnapped, and there's this crazy chick who's trying to free him.
And there's an iron on the hill with a giant hand. What the hell's going on in that damn show? You don't really care. You don't care that there's no plot. The characters are so much fun. The action is so much fun. And there's so much weird crap going on, you can't turn yourself away from that series. You're not exactly sure what the hell you watched, but you know you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
you're
only
right.
6 episodes, because then you can watch it 3 or 4 times and make sense of it.
I've got it on DVD. I've watched it 3 times. It still doesn't make any damn sense.
You know, it's very, to me, I get a bit of deja vu when I watch that show. To me, it feels like anime meets Monty Python when I watch that, because it's just so insane, and the visuals are nuts, and it's just got this bizarre factor to it that, you know, even if it doesn't make sense to you, you just like you guys said, you do get enjoyment out of it. There is a plot, though, and it's very loose, but I think that's the charm of the show. The length of it, the manic pace of it, and the outrageous plot that's in there, it's one of those gems that is against the grain. And I look forward to what that group of people have always come up with at Gainax, because they always think outside the box. I don't know if they ever do anything recently. I'm looking forward to their next work, though.
There was Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt, which I still haven't watched, but it is apparently weird and funny. And then there's of course the Evangelion Super Samoan version.
Oh yeah,
still ongoing.
Super Samoan. I can't take credit for that phrase, but it is the best. But no, I need to watch those Evas too. But yeah, the Gainax, you know, for the most part, they like to rehash Eva, but every so often a gem comes out their doors, and I love them for it.
And suddenly, no one has any idea what to talk about.
No one does.
Any other trends anybody has that you either hate or love?
Now I'm just going over past few things. I like zombies. Zombies are coming up in anime more and more. I like that.
What was that one? High School of the Dead.
And this season we've got Korewa Zombie Desuka, which is, I believe, are you a zombie?
Oh no!
If zombies become the new moe, things are going to get very weird very quickly.
Oh god, I hate zombies to death. Literally, there are a few zombie things I like. I've been interested in watching High School of the Dead and The Walking Dead. The TV series won me over when it comes to zombies and whatnot. But yeah, if it's a growing trend in anime, it'd be interesting to see what they do with it, or what the Japanese mindset of what a zombie is, or what their rendition of a zombie story could be. It could be an interesting prospect, so I guess to be determined on that.
I can see it now. The next Gundam series, zombies fighting giant robots.
Oh Christ, no. I would hope not, but
giant zombie robots.
There you go.
Just Legions of the Mummy Gundam.
Isn't that the XE repair? Anyway.
You're too funny. It kind of looks zombified. It's a little beat up, though, the old rebuilt Exia. The cloaked Exia, I should say.
All right, you want to call this a night?
Yeah, it looks like we've reached the apex of this subject, but we've gone on for a good long while.
All right.
I think we got a lot of mileage out of this subject.
We ramble a lot on this podcast.
Yeah,
it's good rambling though.
Until next time, which is going to be Led Zeppelin versus The Who. Feel free to send your thoughts in on that battle of the bands, particularly who would win in a fight, to this particular web zone. Until then, see ya.
Does Led Zeppelin get to bring a Led Zeppelin to the fight?
No.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside. Released under a Creative Commons license. Check out our website at sbopodcast.blogspot.com. Check us out on Twitter at sbopodcast or our Facebook page at I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside. Or kick me an email at sbopodcast@gmail.com.